I believe in miracles.
Don't say people. I'm doing business here, man.
I don't want anybody tells you words and ideas can change the world.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
90% of what you're saying ain't coming out of your mouth.
From failing, you learn. From success, not so much.
Keep moving forward.
Welcome to the Small Business Miracles Podcast. I'm Jeff Randolph. This small business podcast is brought to you by EAG Advertising and Marketing. We're going to talk about marketing. We are also here to celebrate entrepreneurs. We have marketing news and advice that business owners can use to keep moving forward. This week, we sit down with Kemet Coleman. He's an entrepreneur who owns Missouri's first black-owned brewery, Vine Street Brewing. He's also a creative and a tremendously talented and popular musician. But first, we've got another small business marketing tip to talk about. Hey, welcome back to the podcast. Joining me for this marketing tip is Angela Ridpath. Angela is the VP of Client Services here at EAG Advertising and Marketing. Angela, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
We're so excited to have you here. I've got a question here about, I'm a regular business owner, and I've solved all of my email woes and can make all of my email dreams come true because I decided on MailChimp as my platform. That's my email platform, and I'm very excited about that. And we love MailChimp for a lot of reasons we can talk about for small businesses, but it's not always great. Talk to me just a little bit about what needs to change in some of those MailChimp templates.
Sure. I think MailChimp and some of the predefined templates that you get with any type of email marketing platform, they are great when it comes to setting up a regular template in email, but sometimes they fall short of being able to produce a bulletproof button. And by bulletproof buttons, let me explain. They are a special way of making buttons and emails that work really well no matter what email program or device that your recipient is using. So normally when you make a button and email, it might not show up correctly in some email programs, but with a bulletproof button, the button is designed to be reliable and consistent across different email clients. And a few things that make a button bulletproof are they use a mix of HTML, CSS, and sometimes even small images to ensure that that button displays properly. And there are also backup or fallback styles already built in. So if the main button design doesn't work for a simpler version of the button, something else will show up. So they're really designed to be accessible with features like alt text and descriptions. So people even using screen readers can use it and see it.
So good for deliverability in making sure that your UX is good, your user experience, that you're not, giving somebody a button they can't work with, but also making sure that when someone receives your email, that it doesn't have just a big red X over where that image is supposed to be so that the image doesn't come through.
Exactly.
Well, we like before we walk away, we should probably say some of the things we like about MailChimp for small businesses. It's first, super easy to get into, and the cost is not terrible, right?
Right. They have free versions, and then you can also upgrade to different versions of MailChimp that have workflows built in, and it really does make starting out an email campaign pretty easy. And you said something earlier about authenticating your emails or making emails deliverable, which is a big concern now because there's so many people emailing and email competition is so fierce right now that there are a few simple technical steps that MailChimp and some of the other providers do to really help prove that your emails are coming from a legitimate source. So that makes it less likely that they'll be flagged as spam.
Yeah. So plenty of reasons to use MailChimp, but also just a little red flag there. Hey, you may want to talk to somebody who really knows email. Angela Ridpath, thanks for being with us on the show.
Thank you.
And Theo in the studio here.
Yes, sir.
We're just talking. We're just hanging out, about the show and producing this next one with Kemet as our guest.
Yeah.
Kemet Coleman. Who has a lot of stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
I can't help but notice that we're listening to something. What are we listening to?
Oh, man, it's a new jam that I'm definitely adding to the list from Kemet, a song called Android.
It's got a nice bounce. I like this. This is the kind of thing you could just enjoy for a long time.
Oh, definite bounce. This is one pleasing for all types of reasons. Just tune in and listen to it.
Android. Yeah. I mean, it's the problem with having an Android.
Oh,
we gotta fix somebody.
I mean, hey, Android. I'm gonna put this out there for the ladies. I'm an Apple guy, by the way, so I'm covered.
That's right. There we go. At least we've got that. Well, hey, we're gonna listen to a couple of seconds of this and keep it going, and then let's talk to Kemet.
Let's go.
But I got an Android.
I look good, I look great, girl, don't make this mistake. I got food on my plate, I got money in my safe. Tell your homegirl that you're with, that your boy is legit. I got several businesses, ain't got no time for me to quit. I can tell you feeling this, I can tell you falling quick. I can't lie like you too, but I got something to admit. My bubble green like it's mint, I got nothing to defend. And I hope that you don't trip, because I don't want this to end. Ay.
She say she like me, but I got an Android. But I got an Android. But I got an Android. She think I'm sexy.
And that's Android by Kemet Coleman, featuring Flair the Rebel and Kadesh Flo. Listen on all major streaming outlets on your Android and Apple devices.
But I got an Android.
Welcome back to the podcast. I am joined by Kemet Coleman. He is a musician, he's a creative consultant, and brewery owner, strengthening the cultural identity of urban Kansas City. Kemet, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Absolutely. So the brewery's been open for a little bit now. Give us that origin story. Tell us that process.
Yeah, we're coming up on year one, actually, June 30th, so we're really excited about that. But if we were to go back a year, almost a year, we were really in the thick of things last summer, really trying to get this frantic mode of getting open by the time our liquor license was coming.
Ah, yes. Administrative timing.
Oh my God, it was like landing a plane. Uh-huh. So the backstory, though, a lot of people like to know about is kind of how it all got started. So I worked at Boulevard Brewing Company in 2013. Mm-hmm. I was a tour guide there.
Hey, that's something we have in common, by the way. Well, yeah. We can get to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Keep that in mind. So at 2013, I was a tour guide there. That was my first foray into craft beer. I didn't really know a lot about craft beer. There were some things that I liked. I had tried Tank 7. Mm. I had tried, Flat Tire or something like that.
Sure.
And so I didn't know too much, but I knew that it seemed like a cool industry to be in. And I was at the time a full-time musician looking for some extra cash on the side. And so Boulevard was one of the companies that I applied for, and they hired me. And I was a tour guide there and learned a lot about craft beer, learned a lot about the brewery itself, learned a lot about the brewing process. I was in the guest relations department, so we were kind of the face of Boulevard for a lot of the tourists and guests that were coming. So we had to know a lot about, I had to really immerse myself in the culture.
Right.
Yeah.
You're studying up at that
I'm
point.
Studying
there's,
up.
There's a script. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. As well as the products. So I had to memorize the products and tasting notes and all those things, ABVs. So there was a lot to learn there, and it was just so much fun. So I really loved that. And after my time there, after about a year and a half, I still, kind of went dormant with the beer industry, stopped drinking craft beer as much because I wasn't exposed to it as much. I was just doing my other things. I had a kid at the time, but always had this idea of having beers of my own. Mm-hmm. Because I, from a marketing perspective, I'm somewhat of a marketer myself. I always thought that it'd be cool to brand a beer. So I'm going to wrap this story up a little bit.
Oh, no, don't. I mean, yeah. Go for it. We're
all right.
Good.
So, I kept having the bug, kept going down these rabbit holes of like, well, what if I opened up a brewery? Mm-hmm. And like, if I opened up a brewery, what would it be like? And I definitely wanted to do something that was east of Troost. And this was in 2015 when I kind of had these thoughts. I wanted something east of Troost. And so I looked at a couple places. A couple years roll around after kind of those attempts die down, and I'm back on it. I'm looking at more places because people keep talking to me about breweries and stuff. I guess I'm becoming a beer guy. And we looked at a place, a location on 30th and Troost, and that's where the Combine is now. Mm. That didn't work out. Didn't have the right kind of partners and financials and, you know, all that stuff didn't align, and it was not the right time. So I looked at 2000 Vine, which is where we ultimately wind up, actually, in 20. I looked at that in 2017 when my friend Shamari, who's one of the owners, took me on a tour of these two buildings that were abandoned. They were owned by the city. They were stone. They looked like stone ruins at the time. But I thought it'd be really cool. I thought it was a cool spot, but they were in no way and no way ready for a brewery to be there at that time.
Right.
So that kind of died down. And the partner that I was kind of working with, we kind of parted ways eventually. So pandemic rolls around, and I'm a marketing director at Startland, as well as being a not full-time musician, but a musician, working on music and stuff at gigging, at not really gigging because it's 2020, but definitely doing music.
That put a damper on the gigs.
It sure did. Yeah, I was doing Zoom gigs.
Zoom gig. Hey, everybody. Love
right,
you.
Right. Huh. I was there for about a year. Definitely had the entrepreneurial spirit. Like there was something burning inside of me that really wanted to express itself. So I parted ways with Startland and really went down this rabbit hole of opening up a brewery again. My partner was like, "You keep talking about this brewery. When are you going to do it?" I was like, okay,
right.
good call. Good idea. So it was 2020 and I'm like already reassessing my career. Where do I want it to go? I had released a beer with Crane Brewing and released the album at the same time at 2020. So I'm pairing beer and music already.
Okay.
I'm already kind of in this lane. So I just feel like it was a great time to do that. I was working on a building on 39th in Indiana. And so, you know, the building was kind of, it's an industrial building, an old firehouse from like the 20s, Art Deco. It's really cool. And it's kind of set up, it'd be set up nice for a brewery. Mm-hmm. It's on 39th in Indiana. That neighborhood is not necessarily ready for a brewery.
Okay.
So, but I did wind up asking Woody, who's one of my partners with Vine Street Brewing, because I had met Woody at Boulevard. I took him on a tour, and then I went to his beer festival a couple years later. And so I had him in the back of my brain. I said, if I'm going to ask somebody to start a brewery, I want it to be Woody because he was a home brewer and like one of the other black guys that I've ever seen in the beer scene here at the time. And so I asked him and he was like, wow, okay. And we hadn't talked in like years, like, right? I just out the blue, hey, you want to start a brewery?
And you're like, yeah, yep, that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
Done. I was waiting for this call.
Right,
this is the
I've
call
been waiting,
I was waiting
on you.
Been sitting by the phone.
Exactly. So, I asked him and he I think he was shocked, but he didn't resist. He said, let me think about it. So he thought about it for about a day. He got back to me the next day. He's like, look, you know, if I were to do something like this, I think it'd be really beneficial if we do it with someone who's a little bit more, has a more of an engineer mind. Mm-hmm. And there's this guy named Elliot who's also a home brewer. He's also, you know, a brother, a black guy. And it would be really dope if he could do it with us. In fact, I think we should do it with him. So I was like, look, I'm not a brewer. I'm a marketing guy. I'm a musician. So if you need help, like, brewing, let's go. And I knew that Woody was a very creative brewer. So he's very innovative, and he comes up with, like, really bold recipes that are sometimes a little too adventurous for some people.
You have to appeal to a certain market.
Yeah.
But then there are other people who really want to have those exciting beers.
There are
beers.
People who swear by this.
Yeah.
There are beers that he created as a home brewer that people are like, they still talk about to this day.
Mm-hmm.
He's also into things like pickle beer, which I'm not into personally.
not everyone is.
But anyway, so Elliot was on the complete opposite end of the spectrum. He likes, you know, boring beers.
Mm-hmm.
So he asked Elliot, and Elliot said no. He said no. He straight up said no. I'm not doing this. I'm about to go to grad school. I'm about to get a promotion with my job in Honeywell. Mm. There's no way I would do this. So his wife actually encouraged him to do it. She said this could be a dream come true. And so thank God for his wife.
Yeah. Okay. And thanks from the Kansas City community to his wife.
Exactly. Yeah. So, anyway, he got back to Woody and he said yes. And so then, you know, we were thinking about the location, 39th in Indiana. Mm-hmm. was an initial option. We kind of surveyed the area and we're just like, you know, the neighborhood is just not ready for this yet. So, you know, we started scouting other neighborhoods, and 18th and Vine was at the top of the list because, at least from my perspective, I guess I proposed it because, one, it's at the crossroads of a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. Tourism. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's locals that already, it's an entertainment district, so there's locals already there. And then it's, you know, a hot spot for Black culture, which is something that we would like to elevate, especially as it relates to music specifically.
Right.
So it was kind of a no-brainer when we thought about location-wise. And then when I showed them the space, because I had already seen it in 2017. Mm-hmm. So when I showed them the space, they were blown away. They were just like, wow. They got really excited about it. And then we all agreed that that's where it would be. And so we kind of went down this long rabbit hole of kind of acquiring the space and then signing a lease, mm-hmm. And all that stuff. So yeah, all that whole process from that very initial thought in 2020 to opening up in 2023. So that was, you know, that was almost,
let
3 years.
Let me pivot to the building for a second, because sure. that whole building piece, the entrepreneurship often comes with those skill sets that you find out that you need that you didn't have any concept that you would need going into this project.
Right.
It's a 150-year-old stone building that used to be the Water and Street Department headquarters, and you turn it into a brewery. What was the most surprising thing about, you know, walking into that environment and going, well, let's see, I have a marketing background and I like beer and that's what we want to do. Mm-hmm. But now I have to know building code? Like what was going on like in that process? Yeah. What was surprising about that?
Well, okay. So I have an urban studies background. So I went to UMKC and studied urban studies. So mm-hmm. one of the things that you study is development. And so we did like pro formas and you know, we did site surveys and all kind of stuff like that. Worked directly with the architecture school as well, and the school, like the planning department. So I already had, at least from college, some context mm-hmm. on kind of how this process works. Like I knew what a developer was, or a real estate developer was, or, you know, I knew, you know, triple net leases mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So there was that already there. And so over the years, you know, it had been, you know, 12 or 13 years since I had been to college. And you know, as someone that went to UMKC and studied urban studies, I got relationships with people in real estate. Shamari, my friend, being one of those mm-hmm. people. And then, you know, the developer community is not huge. You know, you've got larger scale, you got small scale, you got micro. So I was kind of already in the real estate space, so that helped. The other thing that helped also was I went through the process before of kind of concept to brick and mortar. Mm. My wife and I started a brick and mortar on Broadway called Moss Salon Studios. Mm. And so it's a co-working space for salon professionals.
Okay.
So, yeah, and we worked with an architecture firm just down here. Actually, I forget their name, but they're a huge architecture firm just down the street here. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And then we worked with contractors, and I learned a lot from that process. Learned a lot. That you know, that construction company is now bankrupt. So anyway, that's a whole nother story. So luckily, and that was a learning lesson for me, because mm-hmm. I knew at that point, like, I didn't want to be directly related to the kind of construction process at that moment, and trying to start a business. So we actually worked with a developer who kind of took the blow of all of the contractor issues and contractor benefits as well.
Yep.
That we didn't have to deal with. So yeah, I mean, that was that. I will say, to answer your question though, you know, what I didn't know about historic preservation was,
oh sure,
yeah, it's an entirely different animal than you know, repurposing something that's already pretty stable and kind of already got decent bones. Our building, the stonework, I mean, everything had to get repaired. The stonework had been previously done. There was, before we got there, there was no roof, there were no windows. So they wound up doing a lot of work prior to us even getting there. Mm. And even as we signed our lease, they found out that we had to replace the entire first floor, concrete floor.
Oh.
Yeah, so we had to demolish the entire floor. And that, I have pictures of that.
And put a new floor.
And put an entirely new floor, concrete floor. in that. And so while they demolished the floor, they discovered that several, at least like 12 or 13 of the original steel beams were so deteriorated that they had to get replaced or repaired. And so we had to go through a special, I forget what it's called now, something with the city. But that set us back like 6 months.
So iconic, though. Like the finished product.
Yeah.
I hope that you can look back on it and go, yeah, worth it. I mean, yeah. I'm far enough away from it.
It's definitely worth it. It's definitely worth it. You know, I knew it would be because, you know, sometimes you just have to have a little vision. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you have to see it in, you know, before it's there, to see it in your mind. You know, and I knew that, you know, the neighborhood really needed something like this.
Right, right.
And, you know, I think there are some cultural assets down there that are amazing. They need to be reinforced by businesses like this.
Yeah, completely. Well, and so you said in an interview that you don't want to just be known for being the first black-owned brewery in Missouri, that you want to be known as a catalyst for change. Because you're bringing together the culture, you're bringing art, you're bringing performance, you're bringing music. It's a community venue. Do you have a vision for what's about to happen there if you look at the 18th and Vine District and even all of Kansas City?
Yeah.
Jump us forward 20 years. What do you want to be known for there? What does that look like in 20 years?
Yeah, I mean, I think we really want to create a crown jewel of Kansas City in that neighborhood. I mean, it is the crown jewel, only acoustically. You know, people's memories are tied to the music from that neighborhood. When they get there, there are some things that there are some opportunities for us to improve. And so what we want to see is our brand and our business being kind of an example for what development can look like, you know, as we see infill, as we see more housing, as we see density, as we start to repair some of these buildings that are deteriorating. Hopefully, you know, these are the things that can strengthen the neighborhood to not really get it back to where it was, but, you know, in the past, it really had this strong heartbeat. So we want to strengthen that heartbeat because I think that area is the most sacred, you know, cultural place, that asset that the city has, at least when we talk about, you know, the last few hundred years. You know, obviously this land was occupied prior to us being here.
Sure.
And I don't want to diminish that, but I do want to say that neighborhood is very special. And so, you know, over the decades, I've seen, you know, investment in the museums, and that's great. But I know that museums need support. They need other types of businesses to bring people down, you know, to do that. And there's other businesses like the restaurants, the bars, the venues, the businesses. There's a call there. There's a lot of great bones.
Oh, yeah.
And so we need to get some meat and skin on this bone. And so what our vision is to help propel the rest of the neighborhood, and especially the South Vine area where the castle is, Carroll Cole Bridge, going even south to like 25th Street. So 20 years, I want to see, I would love it if there was like a gateway, like almost like Chinatown, that said like 18th and Vine or Jazz District or Vine Street or something, to really give people a backdrop of, you know, kind of like Disney World, the
big castle. Different land.
Yeah, a different land, right? Like you're entering into a very intentionally culturally rich place.
That has a feel and also some darn good beer.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
If you search Vine Street Brewing and the White House, you get a result in that search set, which is fascinating. Tell us that story.
Yeah, so I went to the White House in May of 23.
You know, as you do, as we all do. Everybody who was a former tour guide at Boulevard has done it, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so actually it was about at the time of this interview last year. So a year prior. So I was sitting in bed watching Netflix, and I get a text message from Mayor Q that says the vice president has requested me to send someone from Kansas City to the White House for a entrepreneurship like roundtable discussion, like a minority entrepreneurship roundtable discussion. Would you like to go? And I was like, so I'm just watching a show, you know, I'm just sitting here in bed chilling.
I'm watching the Tiger King, just like anybody else.
Exactly. I'm watching Tiger King, Real Housewives,
Real
whatever.
Real Housewives, I'm there.
Bridgerton. Anyway, so I'm looking at this text message with, like, disbelief. Mm-hmm. And so I put my phone down. I'm just like, there's no way I just got that text. So, you know, I'm like, just, all right, I went back to the show, picked the phone back up. It's still there. So I'm like, okay, that's a real text. And I'm like, duh. Like, yeah. Like, okay, when? Like, give me details. He was like, all right, cool. I'll let them know. I don't have details yet, but you should know soon. So, yeah, it was like 2 days later after that text message that I had to go to D.C. Short turnaround time. So, basically, yeah, I went to D.C. and met with the vice president as well as about 20 or I think it was 30 other black business owners from around the country who were all in different industries. Mm. There was some guy working on some stuff that has to do with, like, you know, supporting the space industry. There was a guy who started a luxury shoe company. Mm-hmm. Lots of different types of industries in that room. It was really cool. And it was like young men, so I was like, oh, I'm still young, I'll take it.
That's right.
So yeah, so it was really cool. Spent a few days in DC, which was really beautiful this time of year. I got to walk around, got to take pictures, you know, with the VP. I got to take a picture at like in front of her seal and stuff like that. The coolest thing about this trip, though, mm-hmm. was as she kind of entered the room and made her rounds, kind of introducing herself, she was like, you're with the brewery, right? And I was just like, what? You know that? Right? Yeah, so I'm a little starstruck, but, you know, she was like, she said, I wish you could have brought some for us. And I was like, ah, dang it. So I was like, all right, next time.
Yeah. Even if it's, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning where we're hanging out recording this,
right.
I'm going to pretend like we're drinking.
One of your beers.
Mm-hmm. You're an artist, you're a rapper and producer. NPR Music just listed you and your music as one of 8 Kansas City artists making a mark on their communities. The newest album is called Duality. Mm-hmm. You've explored 6 themes like good and evil and light and dark and love mm-hmm. and hate. Describe that project for us.
Yeah, Duality is really this recognition of how dual kind of our universe is and how, you know, that balance is key. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, pretty much in everything I have ever done has been like kind of dual, you know, it's either music, business owner, it's like,
right,
you know.
Right.
So, you know, it really is that. And so the project, the concept is large. I made the music really approachable, though, you know, kind of like really dance forward and kind of explorative in those different regards. So, yeah, each song kind of revolves around those topics, and they do so in a way that's probably more personal for me. Mm-hmm. People probably wouldn't pick up on it unless I explained it to them. But that was kind of the point of that project, was really kind of like an inner recognition that also, you know, I'm assuming people can probably resonate with folks that feel like either feel dual, you know, or kind of see how like life is balanced that way. So it's a deep concept, but when you listen to the music, like it could bang in a club, you know?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. No, it's great stuff. And what were we listening to at the top of the hour when we first got into the show, we were playing your new single.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah. The new single is called Android. And Android is a song that is dedicated to all the Android users out there who get marginalized for having green bubbles.
You know, I appreciate you tackling the topics that we all have on our mind.
Exactly.
That are really you're helping. You're really helping.
Yeah.
No, look, thank you for letting us play that. That is outstanding. We're happy to have it.
Of course.
Kemet Coleman, are you ready to go into the lightning round?
I'm down.
We've got some questions. You have no idea. We talked, you know, broadly about topics we would talk about ahead of time, but not here from this point on. No way to know what's going on. Let's start with that kind of like dinner party question. Mm-hmm. You're having a dinner party with anyone you want, living or dead, or, you know, let's call it a happy hour.
Okay,
we'll say that we're having some beer.
Yep.
Who's on that list? Who do you want to have around that table?
Are we talking the one person?
Let's have enough people to really talk to.
Okay, dead or alive?
Either.
Okay, I'm going to go with the live to narrow it down.
Okay.
All right, first person will probably be Quincy Jones.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The way he's been able to like maneuver through decades and eras is pretty ridiculous. When it comes to, you know, developing musicians as well as redefining his sound, and being adaptive to any circumstance. So he's definitely top of the list.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Who else besides Quincy Jones? That's a great choice. Wow. Yeah.
Thanks. Probably Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Ah, thank you for this. Yes. I will take any moment to promote Neil deGrasse Tyson on any show that I have a microphone on.
Yes.
Or any speaking engagement. If right. We can get a Neil deGrasse Tyson thing going on.
Yes.
Absolutely.
First of all, this man has the best voice, speaking yes. voice ever. Second of all, the way he can synthesize complex information and data,
mm-hmm.
you know, to... You know, folks that so that folks can understand
to
it.
Educate.
And
yes.
To educate.
Yes.
And to be passionate about it and not sound like, you know, a pompous erudite.
100%.
Yeah.
And to break it down for people to be able to say, you know, hey, he has a position, but
right.
he's respectful of yours.
Exactly.
Like, even if you're completely wrong.
Yeah.
He'll say, okay,
oh, yeah.
all right, well, for the rest of us, I sometimes think this, or
right.
that humans need this.
Yes. I love how it keeps room for...
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah. And does it while drinking very big glasses of red wine.
It does.
With grace.
Yes, with grace.
Spectacular.
Yeah, yeah. I want to be like him when I grow up.
Ah, same.
If I can squeeze one more in here.
Yeah.
There is Madam C.J. Walker. She was the first female millionaire and the first black millionaire. And she started a hairline product company. So I would like to know her secrets and how she scaled that way back in... You know, early 1900s, late 1800s. So
that is a well stocked dinner party or happy hour. That is spectacular.
Yeah.
I
yes.
love it. Do you have a favorite style of beer? That desert island style of beer that you could drink all the time, doesn't matter. Pour me one of those while I decide what I'm going to have next.
Oh man, that's tough. I don't actually. I mean, I really don't. I don't have one. I maybe have like two or three that are kind of on the short list.
Mm-hmm.
I love a Saison.
Yes,
so,
thank you.
Yeah, I love a good Saison. I like the spiciness. Sometimes I like the clove and the kind of banana.
Mm-hmm.
So I really enjoy Saison. I love Tank 7 as well. Our Saison is fire. I love it. It's called the Hood Saison. It's great. What else?
I had the Hood Saison the last time I was there.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, that's going to be a highly recommend from me. It's a good one.
Thank you. Yeah. I really like... I'm very seasonal, so mm-hmm. depending on the weather, that changes like what my preference is. So this time of weather is kind of we're in May right now, so it's kind of like, you know, not too hot, not too cold, a little overcast, kind of vibey.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, I would drink something like an English mild, or you know, I would drink maybe a you know, pretty approachable hazy IPA. I'll try whatever though. In the winter months, I'm doing stouts and porters.
Stouts and porters in the winter, yeah. When you need something to cuddle up with,
exactly.
Yeah,
I'll do I'll do a pilsner in the summertime. Mm. I'll do a pilsner whenever, but really, you know, usually pilsners are occasional for when I'm just like trying to have a long conversation, just hanging out or
right.
you know, playing games, going to the game, you know.
My summer beers have been Mexican lagers of late, where it's just that, you know, I'm watching someone mow the lawn for me, and I'm working up a sweat just looking at them, and you go, yep, that's it, I got to have it.
I agree, actually. I would say Mexican lagers do it for me because they have enough kind of body or enough flavor and a little bit of a body to, like, kind of make you feel like you're drinking a little bit more than carbonated water.
Right.
So, yeah, it's just a very interesting, and the yeast flavor is actually really appealing. So.
It's good. Yeah. You've got a strong marketing background, and you lead the marketing effort, of course, at mm-hmm. Vine Street. Tell us about your agency, because you also, like, why wouldn't you have several other hats that you wear? also have a creative agency. Tell us about that.
Yeah, Kimmett Creative. I started it really kind of just as a catch-all for all of my endeavors mm-hmm. back in 2018. So it involved music. It involved, you know, I've been actually making Squarespace websites since 2011. So my first website was my own. And so I needed a website. I didn't have any money to hire anybody. So I was like, I'm just going to do this.
I'll do it. It's Squarespace. Yeah. I can make this happen.
Exactly. Yeah. So I did that. And then my friends were like, oh, you're really good at this. Can you do mine? And I was like, all right. So I've been doing it since 2011.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so now Kimmick Creative has evolved over the years, and now we focus on web design and graphic design and music direction. Mm-hmm. And so those are kind of the three tiers, and really our specialty is for organizations and companies that have community impact. That's really what we're, especially urban communities. Mm-hmm. So, you know, our clients involve, you know, our 2000 Vine, you know, we're working on a Charlie Parker festival out in KCK. You know, we're Vine Street Brewing Company. You know, there's a lot of little kind of community focused brands that we specialize in. And so, yeah, so that's that. And then the other thing that is really cool about Kimmick Creative is that we are, you know, full service music, you know, direction or music agency. So we can do music production. We can make the instrumentals that you need for your commercial. You know, we can do, you know, if you have a live event, we can, you know, set up staging, PA system, like all that stuff. So really it's, you know, it's kind of this marketing agency that's enhanced by kind of this musical background.
Man, it's there's no end of hats that you wear on this one. How is your marketing background impacted the rest of your, like, do you feel like it has prepared you for marketing just in all of these other areas where you came into the Vine Street and went, I've got the marketing.
Yeah.
This is under control. Everything else I'll worry about.
But yeah.
Did you feel prepared for that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I didn't. I mean, I think about marketing stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. I walk around the streets and I'm like, marketing, 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 you know?
Yep.
So I already kind of had like a game plan in my mind. And what I thought I had to do was what I did, but then there was also other things I had to do because we had to stay nimble and right. We had delays. And so how do you keep people's attention for 2 years, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so that was another thing we had to really focus on. And, you know, marketing played a huge role in that. So
what area of the business do you wish you knew more about?
Of what business?
We really do have to specify what hat you're wearing at that point. Right. Let's stick with Vine Street Brewing. And what do you wish you knew more about in that world? Or
yes. So I think we've got about a year under our belt of being a local brewery. So I'm just fascinated to know how. You know, what the process is like for different breweries to scale, and how to leverage, you know, relationships and how to determine what markets to enter in next. So really looking at scalability is kind of what I would love to know a little bit more about. Mm. And, you know, I've got some friends in the industry that I can tap into for that. We've got to really walk and chew gum. You know, we have to keep the lights on, but then we also have to kind of look kind of have that vision three or four years down
the
road.
Where are we going? Where are we going next? That's spectacular. Speaking of where we're going next, collaborations are a popular way to go.
Yeah.
I saw a very cryptic post on Instagram, on your Instagram about why are these brewers over here at Rochester?
Yeah.
What's going on with
right.
that?
Yeah.
Do you have an ultimate like collaboration? Like, man, I want to do a collaboration with.
Yeah, I mean, I want to do collaboration with, all the friends, like all of our friends, you know, and folks that, you know, we discover along the way really. And that's one of my favorite things about the beer industry was how collaborative it is. It reminded me of the music industry because like with musicians, it's like, hey, I want you to hop on this track. Are you down? And be like, yeah, whatever. I'll just go in our studio, knock it out, send it over. And breweries are kind of the same way. Not all of them, but like there's a lot of breweries that are just like, all right, yeah, well, I mean,
that makes sense.
Yeah,
what do you have in mind?
Yeah. And you start talking recipes and you're like, you want to do that together, you know? So I really like that about it. And I also, when I worked at Boulevard, I realized that, you know, I had thought that they would, you know, that they would be, that their recipes would be close to the chest, but recipes are not really the secret sauce. There's so many different things that determine the water quality, the pH levels, filtration, your yeast strain plays a huge part.
Yes.
Sourcing the hops, sourcing the malt. So it's like, you know, I just love how it's kind of an open book there. And obviously once you get too close, there's a little bit of competition.
That's right.
It's there, but it is so minimized, in relation to all these other industries I've seen.
Yeah, I'll pivot off that Boulevard question just to kind of bring it up. So my tour guide background, I was what was called an old school tour guide.
Oh, cool.
I'm elderly. It happens. Old school tour guide where it was before the sale to Duvel Morgat. All of the volunteers were all of the tour guides were volunteers.
Yep.
We just came in and give 1 weekend a month just like ROTC. Or not like ROTC in any way, right? After that, of course, it became a position and there's structure around it.
Yep.
But you had to learn a lot about John McDonald and giving those tours. Do you look at anything that he did and went, man, yeah, that's the way to do it? Or, whew, I'm glad we didn't do it that way.
Yeah, I think John McDonald played a huge role in this whole idea, in my brain at least, because, he was an artist as well.
Yeah.
And a carpenter mm-hmm. by trade, but his wife said something really funny when I was talking to them at some point. She was just like, he said he wanted to do this and it was going to cost this, and she was like, well, we're already broke anyway, so like,
yeah, what's the matter?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So they moved above the brewery,
yeah,
which is really cool. I was just like, okay, so there is really this grand sacrifice that kind of has to happen. This super high risk, super high reward thing mm-hmm. that has to happen. And so you really have to take a dive off of it. And I don't think I would have been that confident if I didn't see, his
success. Yeah, paving the way for people like the rest of the brewers in town who went, oh, yeah, I could do that.
Exactly.
And not have to ask your dad for all of his retirement money. And
right.
His dad was like, well, yeah, but if this doesn't work, I'm living with you.
We're
both going to be living in this building if it doesn't work out right.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. As far as collaborations go, any musical collaborations that you're like, that's my ultimate collaboration, I want to work with?
Oh, man.
Blank.
Yeah, so many. Where do I begin? There's a lot of underground artists that I really like. Mm-hmm. There's a guy in the UK called MPH. He's really dope. He does like garage house music. So I'm huge into electronic, specifically house music as well. So I love his style. He's dope. As far as the hip hop realm, I'd love to do something with Kendrick. I'd love to do something with J. Cole. I would love to do something with, all these guys, really. Tech N9ne. I have a song with Tech N9ne, but I would love to do another one. I could go on. I mean, obviously, Quincy Jones. That would be great.
Yeah, 100%.
Dr. Dre. Outkast.
I just feel like the more we put out there, and if any of these come true,
yeah,
let's just say that it's the podcast that did that. let's say this that was the love connection
yes.
that made it happen.
Right.
Kemet Coleman, I'm taking you out of the lightning round. You've done a fantastic job. You've answered all of our questions.
Cool.
Where can people find you if they want more information? Throw out any of the locations where you want them. We've talked about a lot of different things today. So.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. For myself, you can find me at just Kemet Coleman, K-E-M-E-T, Coleman, like the camping gear. And then for Vine Street, you can just find us on socials at Vine ST Brewing. And for Kemet Creative, just under Kemet Creative. So, yeah, you can find me on there. I'm pretty accessible. Just hit me up on a DM or whatever.
Yeah, Kemet Coleman, thanks for being with us today. We appreciate you stopping by and sharing all the love. Appreciate it.
It has been a lot of fun, Jeff. Thanks.
And that is our show. Thanks to our guest, Kemet Coleman. And thank you for listening to the Small Business Miracles podcast. Remember to subscribe, leave us a 5-star rating and review, drop us a line on the website at eagadv.com if you have any thoughts. Until then, we'll be out here helping entrepreneurs with another Small Business Miracle.